Oh, this wooden toy set is really, really fun.
It is.
We could pretend it's like real life.
Kids love to play, and play that points to Jesus is a big part of a child's faith journey. Wooden toys from Wicking Vicar do just that, growing the faith through play. Wicking Vicar's Children's Church playset lets little ones delve into the divine service, and the Children's Advent Wreath is a safe way for kids to make the Advent tradition their own. Solid wood and heirloom quality for children ages 3 and up. Order yours today at wickingvicar.com and click on Wooden Toys in the menu bar. This Christmas, gift the children in your life faith-building wooden toys from Wicking Vicar.
Philip ran to the Ethiopian and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" And he said, "How can I, unless someone guides me?" Like the Ethiopian eunuch, there are millions of people around the world who want to understand what the Bible says, but they need someone to guide them. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation translates books like Luther's Small Catechism, which opens Scripture's meaning. To learn how you can help introduce people to the Savior, visit lhfmissions.org.
You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is, I think, a hymn sing or a story time. I'm not sure. It's kind of both.
All right. As I said, right before you turned on the microphones, we'll call it a story hymn sing time.
Story hymn sing time, yes, because today it's more of a hymn festival day because this episode is dropping on October 25th, and October 26th is the commemoration day for Philip Nicolai, Johann Hiermann, and Paul Gerhardt, hymn writers. Mm-hmm. So today we get the stories of all three of these hymn writers and a little dabble into each of their hymns, although quite honestly, we've covered most of Paul Gerhardt's already.
I wonder why we did that, Sarah. Why did we do that, Sarah?
I don't know. And also both of Philip Nicolai. So as I was looking through these hymn lists, I was like, there's actually not a lot that we haven't already covered somewhere. So, but we'll get to that. I have a plan. So first, like, why October 26th? This seems like a little bit of a random day in the church year to just have these three hymn writers. I didn't fully like research or ask people specifically this question, but it is October, which is, you know, the Lutheran month anyway, because Reformation is just a few days away. It is obviously Reformation season, and October 26th is Philip Nicolai's death date, which is commonly a day that we commemorate a saint in the church year anyway. So I don't exactly know how it happened, but if it's all on Philip Nicolai's death date, then maybe he got it first, and then we were like, all right, let's add these other guys on too. I don't know, but here we are, October 26th, three fantastic hymn writers, two of whom we've actually talked about before, and one of whom we have not. Mm-hmm. So this is fun. This is exciting.
All right. So
why these hymn writers? Well, there's a lot of hymn writers, right? And a lot of really good ones. Philip Nicolai is the writer of The King and Queen of Chorales, Wake Awake, For Night is Flying, and O Morning Star, How Fair and Bright. He also played a part in the Reformation, so he's a pretty obvious choice. Johann Hiermann might be the dark horse. I don't know how much I really thought about him before I wrote this podcast. He doesn't show up a lot in a lot of other places that I like end up cross-referencing a whole bunch of people. I don't know that I've really talked about him much before.
The name does not ring a bell.
Yeah, but in the Hymnal Companion, it says that he might be among the top three greatest hymn writers between Martin Luther and Paul Gerhardt. So I suppose it's high time that we talk about Johann Hiermann. And I'll tell his story in a second. And obviously, Gerhardt is like, well, duh, obviously, Gerhardt has to be on a commemoration day somewhere because he wrote like a bazillion hymns. And he's always listed as like the Lutheran hymn writer other than Martin Luther, which is kind of obvious. But like, Gerhardt's always at the top of every fun hymn list. So I did do a ridiculous poll in the lounge. I was like, I always do a poll for these hymn sing episodes, so I'll just do one anyway. I don't really know what I was going to try to get out of it because this list of hymns is like all of them are good. So I didn't even ask people to pick their favorites because I that was just cruel. Like, normally I'm like, haha, pick your favorite. And this time I didn't even try because they're all good. And literally nobody could pick a favorite out of this entire list, probably. I asked which one of them people would like to know more about in a podcast. And unsurprisingly, Wake Awake for Night is Flying and Oh Sacred Head Now Wounded were the top two. I mean, people love those hymns, right? Mm-hmm. And the other ones, they were all very evenly smattered around for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
A few got zero votes, however, and a few of the ones that have zero votes are a few of my favorites. So I have some more education to do. Like, calm your hearts and voices raising. Guys, that's the Quempus Carol. I did an entire episode about that hymn.
Okay, well, next time you do a poem like this, Sarah, just put asterisks next to your favorites so at least I can go through and vote for them. So you don't feel hurt.
I laughed very loudly at that. And oh, Christ,
you have rarefied tastes. That's okay.
That is true. I have very specific reasons for loving certain hymns, and nobody else has those reasons. So this is not strange. I just found it very amusing that three of my favorites on the list all got zero votes. So here we are. So I'm going to go through each hymn writer's story and then the hymns that are attributed to each hymn writer. And then I'm actually going to sing some today. They're all long, so we'll figure out how that goes as we get there. But
I'm not going to sing the whole hymn.
No.
I'm telling you that now.
No, that would be excessive. Nobody needs that. That's
Erin
okay.
Erin will, like, turn off your microphone when she's had enough of each one. A representative sample.
I'll be announcing, soprano, no!
I would find that very funny. Like, even one stanza of most of these hymns is long enough anyway. But it is a hymn sing story time thing.
We should have some.
Gotta have a little hymn singing. Yeah. So first, Philip Nicolai. He was part of the Lutheran Reformation. He was born in Mengeringhausen in Waldeck, Hessen, which is like north central Germany, on August 10th, 1556. So like high time of the Reformation. He was the third of eight children born to pastor Dietrich Nicolai Raffelmühl, who became Lutheran as an adult along with part of his congregation. And you'll notice his last name is not Nicolai. What's up with that? Mm. So Philip eventually dropped the Raffelmühl from his name because he preferred his father's Christian name, Nicholas, which became Nicolai for his last name. Philip Nicolai has a nice ring to it. So I approve of this name change.
It doesn't have a very German ring to it.
That is true. Yeah.
He was a bit of an individual, it sounds to me. Like, he's going to go his way.
Yeah.
I did not know you could choose between your father's surname and your father's middle name. I feel like that would have opened up some different worlds for me.
There
you go.
I don't know.
It's like your stage name, your hymn writer name. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Superhero hymn writer name. Got it.
Superhero name. I love it. Philip was a smart kid. He showed a lot of interest in theology and music and classical Latin poetry at a young age. And he was sent away to school during a plague in 1567. And with the generosity of the court of Waldeck, he was able to have this university education in Erfurt in 1575. His brother Jonah and his mother died shortly after that, so he didn't really stay there very long, but he returned to university at the University of Wittenberg and got a degree in theology in 1579. So then he served as an assistant to his father at Mengeringhausen in 1579 for 4 years, and then he was ordained in 1583 and served at Herdecke in Westphalia, where his dad had served, and he had introduced evangelical theology and was met with this harsh resistance from the town council that was very strongly Roman Catholic. So enter in the theological struggles that I feel like are in a lot of these hymn writer stories. So Philip had to resign in 1586 because of the Spanish invasion of Herdecke. So then he ministered in secret to a group of Lutherans in Cologne who worshipped in their homes. And in 1588, he was head pastor in Altwindungen and served the Countess of Waldeck, Marguerite von Gleichen, as court preacher and tutor for their son, Wilhelm Ernst. And he eventually had a pastorate in Unna in Westphalia, but the plague hit them hard in 1597. I should have made bingo cards for this episode because several of these things will come up in other stories as well. Very morbid bingo, actually. Maybe not. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
War, plague, tutoring. Anyway, so the plague hit in 1597 and killed about 14,000 parishioners. He had over 300 funerals in July alone, 170 deaths during 1 week in August. It's a lot of death and trauma. Then in December, he had to flee again because of a Spanish invasion, and he couldn't get back to Una for nearly 4 months. In August of 1601, Philip became the head pastor of St. Catherine's Church in Hamburg. And in 1606, he married the widow of his pastoral colleague, Philip Dornberger, and cared for her son and daughter. He died from fever. It's another bingo. On October 26th, sorry, that's really morbid. On October 26th, 1608, and we commemorate him on his death date, which is tomorrow as this podcast drops with Johann Hermann and Paul Gerhardt. And as you might expect, because of when and where he lived, Philip was involved in the theological controversies going on during the 1500s, namely what to do with the sacrament of the altar. Crypto-Calvinism. This has come up many times before.
Mm-hmm.
It's very strong at this point in history, in Reformation history. He was on the classic Lutheran theological side of the argument, opposing the crypto-Calvinists. This, among other controversies, was what led him to the Formula of Concord in 1577. And while Philip was pastor at Altwindungen, Nikolai was advocating for his fellow clergy to adopt the Formula of Concord. He also wrote a lot, not surprisingly. During the plague in Una, he wrote a devotional work, Frieden, Spiegel des ewigen Lebens, in 1599, which contained both King and Queen of Chorales, Wie schon leuchtet der Morgenstern, and Wachetauf ruft uns die Stimme. Wie schon leuchtet, O Morning Star, was written as an acrostic poem in commemoration of his former student, Wilhelm Ernst, who had died the previous year at age 14. And obviously, I mean, this comes up all the time. It is such a testament of faith that so many of these historic Lutheran hymn writers were writing during really, really hard times. And this will come up in the next two stories as well. These hymn writers were facing so many things. And yet we sing of all of God's enduring faithfulness and salvation during all of this. And this is a theme that has become the theme of these hymn sing episodes, that a lot of our really, really great hymn writers that write things that really speak to us now, even when they were written 400 years ago. I mean, this was in the midst of some really, really terrible stuff. In Lutheran Service Book, we have 395, O Morning Star, How Fair and Bright, text and tune. Philip Nikolai also wrote the tune for these. This is the hymn of the day for Epiphany, for the Epiphany of our Lord. But the morning star that's in this hymn is not just the star that led the wise men to Jesus, or not even the star that led the wise men to Jesus. Hmm. It's actually talking about Christ himself as the morning star. So really, we can sing this hymn all year round, and I would not be mad about that because it's great. So petition to sing O Morning Star all the time, not just on Epiphany. And then also Wake Awake for Night is Flying. He also wrote the tune for this one. And this was number two in the poll, so people do love this one. This is also appropriate for right now, season of the church year, because we are nearing the end of the church year in just a few weeks. This is the hymn of the day for Proper 27 in Series A, which is not the one we're on as of recording year, which is in November, or Series B right now, and last Sunday of the church year for the one-year lectionary. So this is all happening in just a few weeks. And I thought this would be fun to sing, even though everybody knows it. It is very long. So obviously just one stanza.
Briskly.
Briskly.
It's not a funeral dirge.
I will sing it briskly. Oh, it starts really low. Okay. Wake, awake, for night is flying. The watchmen on the heights are crying. Awake, Jerusalem, arise. Midnight hears the welcome voices, and at the thrilling cry rejoices. Oh, where are ye, ye virgins wise? The bridegroom comes, awake, your lamps with gladness take. Alleluia, with bridal care yourselves prepare.
near.
Was that brisk enough?
That was
great.
Yeah.
That was
danced.
Very nice.
It's fun to sing that fast, actually. Petition our cantor to.
I'd rather sing that hymn too fast than too slow.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true for most anything.
All right. Next is Johann Hermann.
Mystery man.
The mystery man that we've never talked about. Except maybe a few mentions.
Random mentions.
Here and there, because we've covered a few of his hymns.
We never focused on him, though.
No. So we are moving forward in time just a tiny bit, a teeny tiny bit. Johann Hermann was born on October 11th, so another October baby, in 1585, so not too much later than Nikolai, in Rauten, Lower Silesia, what is now Rutne, Poland. And again, you remember what we say about great hymn writers having pretty terrible lives of suffering, and Hermann is no different.
You know, I used to think I might want to be a hymn writer when I grow up, but every time I listen to one of your stories, I'm like, maybe I'm good.
Plagues and wars and seeing your home. That's
deep personal losses.
What these stories have in them. So Hermann was the fifth and only surviving child of Johannes and Anna Hermann. His dad was, Johannes, was a poor furrier, so the family didn't really have a lot of physical means. And he suffered a severe childhood illness, so much so that his mother vowed that if he survived it, she would make sure he could study for the ministry, even if she had to beg for money. Sounds like a familiar storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Hermann went to a couple of different schools, including one pretty far away from home. But after a year being away from home, he got sick. This turns into the story of his life, and had to return home to his school in Rauten. From 1602 to 1610, he moved around Poland to study and tutored some famous people's kids, including poet Valerius Herberger and the Baron Wenzel von Rothkirch. And he traveled with the Baron to the University of Strasbourg in 1609 to attend these lectures in theology. And he met professors of rhetoric and law, and he published a book of epigrams. But once again, he got an eye infection this time and had to return home to Rauten in 1610. And then in 1611, on the Baron's recommendation, Hermann was appointed deacon of Köben, now Chobinia, Poland, on the Oder River. And the older pastor that was here already there at that church died pretty soon after he arrived. So he became the regular pastor and got married to his first wife, Dorothea. The next 5 or 6 years, thankfully, were pretty uneventful for him. So he had a period of mostly peace and calm in his life. We all know that never lasts very long. In 1616, the town of Köben was nearly destroyed by fire. And then the next year, 1617, Dorothea died, and they had had no children. So he was left with no wife and no children. He married again the next year to Anna. They had 4 children. Yay! But we all know what happens now in history in 1618, the 30 Years' War. Mm. You all know this would come up in this episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of my favorite hymn writers lived during the 30 Years' War. And that happened from 1618 to 1648, which is the entirety of the rest of his life. So when he got married the second time to the end of his life was during this 30 Years' War. And this war was really brutal on Köben. I mean, it was everywhere, but Silesia was maybe the hardest hit area of the 30 Years' War. We've had several other stories of Silesian hymn writers during this time, and the state of everything in Silesia was pretty horrific. Silesia belonged to the House of Austria, and so the government and clergy, like the central government and clergy in the House of Austria, were all tied to Rome. So this meant that the Austrian king was determined to restore Roman Catholicism to the entire territory, no matter what the cost. And that cost ended up being pretty steep. So Köben was plundered 4 times. As a Lutheran pastor, that meant that Hermann had to flee every time. He lost his possessions several times. He was forced into hiding for nearly 4 months. He was nearly sabered twice. Another time he had bullets whizzing by his head while he escaped across the Oder River with a group of people. So, like, his life was in danger almost constantly. Hmm. Of course, in this time when war hits, so does disease. In 1631, Silesia was hit really hard with severe pestilence, killing around 550 just in Köben. Silesia suffered the most from 1623 to 1638 during Hermann's final 15 years in Köben. And in 1623, he once again had an illness. He got this really severe throat infection that also affected his like nose and airway passages. Sounds very uncomfortable. Do not recommend. It forced him to finally give up preaching in 1634. So for the next 4 years after he had to give up preaching in the pulpit, he had an assistant read his sermons to the congregation until he retired, actually retired in 1638 to Lissa, which is now Leszno, Poland. Anna, his wife, dear wife, cared for him until he died on February 17, 1647. And his final years were marked by a lot of severe and chronic illness, which is kind of, I mean, his entire life, he was just sick a lot. Mm-hmm. Probably not super uncommon for this time, but just like all the time, something. But he used this time as a time of catechesis. He would study and write and use this time as a devotional time to find more to write about with his faith, as any fabulous hymn writer would. Speaking of hymn writer, he was writing Latin poetry as early as 1605, and he was crowned poet laureate by Emperor Rudolf II in October 1608 when he was not even 23 yet. So he was young and a very good poet at a young age. One of his major works was his collection of Latin verses based on the Holy Gospels. And with each of these passages was this line of German poetry, which kind of pointed the direction he was going to eventually go with his writing. So over the years, he wrote around 400 German hymns. I don't know why I've never like talked about him before. German hymns. Following these standards from Martin Opitz, and he is for sure one of the best Silesian hymn writers. And another really strange and morbid twist, Hermann's son Samuel converted to Roman Catholicism in 1640 under the influence of the Jesuits in Breslau, but Johann pleaded with him to return to Lutheranism, which he finally did, but his son Samuel died soon after from a fever in 1643, but he converted first. So that's good anyway. So Johann Hermann's life was full of suffering, but in that suffering, he was really pointed to Christ, and he had this very true and fervent confidence and faith in Christ. And that is entirely evident in his hymns. So in Lutheran Service Book, we have 421, Jesus grant that balm and healing, fantastic Lent hymn. 439, O dearest Jesus, what law hast thou broken? Another fantastic Lenten hymn. 568, if your beloved son, O God. I don't know that I've sung that one a whole bunch.
I don't recognize it either. Flipping through the hymnal madly to see if I recognize this hymn.
I don't either. It's got some really lovely, compelling words, but I don't recognize it at first glance.
Yeah, I don't think I've sung this one that much. It's in the justification section of the hymnal, and we have a lot of really good justification hymns. So my guess is that it just gets overlooked for ones that people know more. But it's great. Highly recommend. Y'all should sing it. I'm not going to sing it today because I have a different one to sing. Mm-hmm. The 696, O God, my faithful God. This one I have sung a lot. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. I think this one's sanctification. Yes. This one's in the sanctification section of the hymnal. It's very good. And then 774, Feed Thy Children, God Most Holy.
Now, and this one I know. That one I'm very familiar.
Yes. That one, yes. Very familiar. And then 839, O Christ, our true and only light. It got zero votes in the poll, people.
Oh, wow.
I love this hymn. I must run in some odd hymn circles. I don't even know. I feel like we've sung it at the IC a bunch, but I might be making that up. This might be one that my church sings a lot just because we like it. I don't know.
It's in the mission and witness section of the hymnal, which is not a section that we cover very often in the liturgical calendar.
It's true. And I was thinking maybe I need to do a little mini hymn sing on that section at some point.
Yeah.
But like Lift High the Cross is in Mission and Witness. We sing that one all the time.
Yeah, but that one's a bop.
Right. And O God, O Lord of Heaven and Earth, also Mission and Witness section.
That one I don't sing as much.
Oh, that one's so good. Listen, God is calling. Like there's some really good ones in Mission and Witness. But this one, 839, O Christ, our true and only light. Definitely a favorite hymn of mine. So we need some education about this one, apparently, so we sing it more. This hymn was published in Devoti Musica Cordis in Leipzig in 1630 in the section Pious Christian Songs of Lament for Times of Persecution and Hardship. Gee, I wonder why. Mm. Now that I know his story, it makes a lot of sense. It was obviously written during the 30 Years' War, directs us away from destruction, devastation, and disruption to the peace and faith and hope that we have in Christ. Love hymns that do that. Hermann modeled this hymn on a prayer, ironically, from Jesuit Petrus Michaelis, Peter Michael Brillmacher, who lived 1542 to 1595, for unbelievers and people who had gone astray, aka the Protestants. The prayer ended up, somehow, in a 1592 prayer book from Lutheran Philip Kegel. The prayer is nearly identical to the text of the hymn. If you have the hymnal companion, the prayer is written out in the hymnal companion. I thought about reading it, but it's long and I don't need to do that for you. But if you have a hymnal companion or have access to one, it's almost identical. Hmm. I know I find it ironic, and the hymnal companion also finds it ironic, that Hermann based this beautiful hymn on a Jesuit prayer whose life was basically dedicated to bringing lost Protestants back to the, quote, true faith of Catholicism.
That is very ironic, especially given the first line of the hymn, O Christ, our true and only light, enlighten those who sit in night. Realizing that it was written referring to Lutherans, and that Lutherans have totally taken it on.
Right.
That's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible and probable that Hermann just found it in the prayer book and didn't really know the origin story of it. That's very plausible. It's about bringing everyone, even our enemies, into the church's fold. And it was written during wartime, but now it's sung in our modern context more for domestic and foreign missions, asking God to push away the darkness and bring people into the light of Christ. And of course, the version that we have is a reworking of Catherine Winkworth. You knew she would show up in this episode somewhere.
I was hoping.
Hello, Catherine.
Reworking of her translation that appeared in TLH. So this hymn is in TLH, and I still didn't know it, which is interesting because I grew up on TLH. I'm learning as I do more of these hymn sing episodes that I don't actually know a lot of what's in TLH, because we had a very small subset of hymns that we sang, and I didn't know anything much outside of that.
That resonates.
Yeah, so this was in TLH, as is the last one I'm going to sing too, which I just find really funny. It's also the hymn of the day for Epiphany 3 in the 3-year lectionary and Proper 9 Series B, which is also 3-year lectionary during the green season. So I'm going to sing this one too.
Okay.
This is a lot shorter. Oh, Christ, our true and only light, enlighten those who sit in night. Let those afar now hear your voice, and in your fold with us rejoice.
That is a pretty hymn.
Can I sing another stanza?
Okay, fine.
Oh, I don't know which one, though. Never mind. I'd have to do two, and I don't know that you'd let me.
No, you can do number three. Do stanza three.
Okay. Oh, gently call those gone astray, that they may find the saving way. Let every conscience sore oppressed in you find peace and heavenly rest.
That one is a lovely one. And it's so nice for... like, I think a lot of times we think of the mission and witness section as being the one that's like for, I don't know, whenever I hear mission, I'm always defaulting in my mind to international mission.
Yeah.
That this whole song really covers all the bases of like all these people that God is longing to call to himself, including those who have turned away from it. He would call them back. Who are often here.
Exactly.
In our midst. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
This tune also has a fantastic setting. That's part of the, partially I like it because I like the tune and the setting. So there's that too. But ask your organist to play it. It's beautiful. And we have come finally to Paul Gerhardt. Buckle up.
Okay.
I have mentioned him in like every hymn sing podcast, probably, or pretty close, because he shows up everywhere. So I was realizing as I was writing his story again, because I wrote his story in very short form I think the first year that we did podcasting, I was like, oh, I need to do a whole episode on him. Well, here we are. Not a whole one, but he gets a third of an episode. That I think that counts. It's just interesting that I was like, oh, he had such a terrible life of suffering. But like almost every really good hymn writer had a terrible life of suffering. Yeah. And Paul Gerhardt was just no different.
Then. You didn't understand yet.
I didn't get it. I didn't understand, but I understand now. So like that in and of itself, he draws off of that to write really great hymnody, but so do a lot of other hymn writers. So like, yes, Paul Gerhardt is one of my favorites, but my list of favorite hymn writers is starting to get a little long now. After doing all of these hymn sing episodes, there are so many really good hymn writers. So I think he's one of a lot of people's favorites for good reason. Only Martin Luther outnumbers him in German hymn books. So that's part of the reason why we just know a lot of his hymns. We have 17 of them in LSB. That's a lot.
That is a lot of hymns.
Yes. He was born in Gräfenhainichen, Saxony on March 12th, 1607. So we're just a little bit further in history from Johann Hermann. All three of these guys did live at the same time, however, which is kind of, I wonder if they knew each other. Wouldn't that be cool? Need some fan fiction of like hymn writers meeting at a meeting at an inn and writing cool hymnody. Anyway,
two hymn writers walk into a bar. History ensues.
Right, exactly. The Holy Roman Empire in Germany was still plagued with confessional conflicts that affected his own family, who held very steadfastly to the Book of Concord. So his mother's family was banished from their home because his grandfather, Pastor Caspar Stark of Eilenburg, held to the Book of Concord in the midst of political pressure of the territorial rulers. So this would have been earlier in Reformation times, a theme of this episode. So confessional steadfastness ran in his family. It was kind of part of his DNA, and that would mark his life also. So Paul Gerhardt went to school originally in Gräfenhainichen, it's fun to say, but was soon sponsored to attend the Royal Academy at Grimma. And there he began to develop this poetic skill as he read Latin classical poetry, and he studied these hymns and songs that were based on biblical, especially Old Testament texts. And he graduated from Grimma in 1627 and continued to study at the University of Wittenberg, where he was taught by professors who held very firmly to the Lutheran confession. So this probably also shaped a lot of his hymn writing. And again, it is already the 30 Years' War, running 1618 to 1648. Gerhardt was not exempt from tragedy, along with everybody else who lived during this time. His family home, his church, and his entire village were completely destroyed during the war. So he stayed in Wittenberg until 1642, where he went to Berlin, and he tutored and started to make a name for himself as a poet and hymn writer. He got to know the famous cantor Johann Krüger, who shows up also a lot in these podcasts. He was cantor at St. Nikolai in Berlin and a music teacher of the school at the Grey Monastery in Berlin. And he loved Gerhardt's poetry. So he set these texts to music and published them in 1647 in the Praxis Pietatis Melica, the musical practice of piety. So this is probably a big reason why we love Gerhardt's hymns. He wrote these hymns with a personal devotion in mind. When we read them and we're like, oh, these are great for devotions, because that's how he wrote them, for personal devotion. And he didn't really think they'd be used as congregational singing, especially because hymn books during divine service wasn't totally a thing still at this time. So he really didn't think they'd be used for congregational singing, but here we are today. Krüger's book really put Gerhardt on the map as this pious and pastoral writer of devotional hymns. And that's exactly how we understand them today. In 1649, Gerhardt was finally called to a parish in Mittenwalde. The delay surely was due to the fact that there was a war going on that had just ended in 1648. He married Anna Maria Bartold, whom he had known from being a tutor in her home in Berlin. He served as provost and superintendent of all of the surrounding parishes, and of course continued to write all of his hymns, including the passion hymn, O Sacred Head Now Wounded, which I think ended up number one in the poll of people loving hymns. I mean, it's a great hymn. It was inspired from his time in Grimma, when he would have learned the poetry of Arnulf of Leuven, including poems about the wounds of Christ. And at Mittenwalde, this face cloth of Veronica which I did not research more, so I don't exactly know what that is. It has the imprint of the face of Christ, and it would have been in front of him every time he was celebrating the sacrament of the altar. So these two things in his brain, like constantly seeing this face of Christ in front of him and this poetry of Arnulf of Leuven, really inspired him to write O Sacred Head Now Wounded. That hymn and 64 others of his appeared in the next edition of Kruger's Praxis Pietatis Melica. After Kruger's death, his successor in Berlin, Johann Gerhard Ebeling, published an exclusive work of over 100 of Gerhard hymns. So, like, he just kept writing them. Hmm. Gerhard returned to Berlin in 1657 to be senior pastor at St. Nikolai. He was dismissed from there in 16...
St. Nikolai?
Yes, St. Nikolai. I know. I don't know if that's from Philip.
Oh, okay.
It is the same name, though.
Huh. Probably I know. Both loved Nicholas.
Probably.
Myra.
Probably.
Maybe Nikolai knew that church as well. Maybe that's partly why he wanted to choose that as the name he was known by. Anyway, okay, keep going.
I told you I should have made bingo cards for this episode.
There's so many like threads through the whole thing.
I've got 30 years war, bingo, personal illness, widowhood, tutoring people's kids.
Exactly.
Is that a bingo yet?
Barons. There's a couple of barons in here. Yeah, there's several.
Anyway, okay. He was dismissed from there from St. Nikolai in 1666 because he refused to disavow his confessional Lutheran heritage and assimilate into this weird imperially decreed Lutheran Calvinist accommodation partnership thing. He's like, sorry, no, I'm Lutheran. Thank you very much. So during this time, he lost not only his, you know, livelihood, he also lost his wife, 4 of his 5 children. So this is the time. So I always thought that he lost his wife and children during the 30 Years' War, and that is not accurate. He was married after the 30 Years' War. So he went through like all of the trauma of his like mother and grandfather having to be kicked out of their home. Then he went through all of the 30 Years' War, and then he lost his wife and children. So this is like ongoing all of the time, thing on top of thing. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I like read the timeline properly and realized.
So how old was he when he married then?
He married in 1649.
But it's not that he didn't marry them until after that. He didn't lose them until after.
He did not lose them until after the war.
Okay, I gotcha.
But he didn't marry until after the war either.
Oh, okay.
He was born in 1607. Uh-huh. He married in 1649.
Okay.
So he was not young.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he lived to be 70, so... lived a good long life considering everything he went through. Actually, that is a good long life.
Time of the world.
Yeah.
Probably so a good life choice to wait until after the war ended.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. After he lost his wife and 4 of his 5 children, he got a call to Lübben where he served until he died on May 27, 1676 at the age of 70. So there's this portrait of Gerhard in this parish church and it has the words, Paul Gerhardt, a theologian sifted in Satan's sieve. It's very accurate. And afterward found faithful, died in Lübben in the year 1676, age 70. So he ultimately left behind 134 German hymns and 11 Latin poems, many written during this confessional crisis and personal tragedy. So I wonder if I'm just... thinking now that I'm reading all of these stories, because Hermann wrote, what, like 400? And Gerhard, we have 134. But I bet you a lot more of Gerhard's were published and circulated among the people. Mm-hmm. A lot of times these hymns, like they wrote them, but they weren't necessarily published in books for like popular consumption. So in Lutheran Service Book, that's just me making stuff up. In Lutheran Service Book, we have 334, O Lord, How Shall I Meet You? My favorite Advent hymn. 360, All My Heart Again Rejoices, one of my favorite Christmas hymns. 372, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, another one of my favorite Christmas hymns. 375, Come Your Hearts and Voices Raising. 438, O Lamb Goes Uncomplaining Forth. 453, Upon the Cross Extended. 467, Awake My Heart with Gladness, my favorite Easter hymn. 596, All Christians Who Have Been Baptized, that's a great one. They're all great ones. 683, Jesus, Thy Boundless Love to Me. I love that one. 724, If God Himself Be For Me. Also love that one. 726, Evening and Morning, which I never think is going to be a very fun hymn because of the title, but I actually really like it. It's fun to sing. But the title, I'm like, evening and morning, hey, but it's actually great. 737, rejoice my heart, be glad and sing. 754, entrust your days and burdens. That's a great one. 756, also a great one. Why should cross and trial grieve me? 880, now rest beneath night's shadow. That is my hands down absolute favorite nighttime hymn. It's a great lullaby, guys.
Favorite nighttime.
Yeah. I do have a favorite nighttime hymn. We made a whole episode.
I know we did. That was a great episode, yeah. Too.
I love that episode.
I just forgot this was your favorite.
That is definitely my favorite. 977, I will sing my maker's praises. And if you know your hymnal numbers, you're like, wait, there's no 977 in our pew edition. And you would be correct.
We sing it at chapel, though.
We do.
It's like a late edition.
It's in the digital version. And the translation of 449, 450, O Sacred Head Now Wounded, which was number one in the poll. So since we don't have 977 in our pew edition, we're going to get the story behind that one because I love it. So does Chaplain Sean Denzer. Every time we write about this hymn to each other in emails, it's always in all caps. We like yell about it. And he wrote the description of it in the Hymnal Companion, which not surprise me.
Okay.
He wrote it when he was a vicar, like baby chaplain. That's great. So bottom line is that you can literally sing through the entire church here with Gerhardt hymns and be totally fine. Like if your hymnal was just Gerhardt hymns, you could sing basically the entire church here and then some and be fine because he just wrote that many and they're all so good. If you listen to the 5-year party episode of our podcast just a few weeks ago, you would have heard me sing the first lines of most of these hymns, trying to get Rachel to guess Gerhardt's name very unsuccessfully during Aaron's soprano. No.
Yeah. If you just switched the clues so that I had to get Sarah to guess Gerhardt, we'd have been there in less than two measures.
Probably, but that's okay. Okay, so 977, I will sing my maker's praises. I love this hymn. Didn't know about it until probably working here at the International Center. I don't think I sang it before being here. It was also in TLH, though, which is just really funny that it existed before and I didn't know about it. Story of a lot of these hymns. This hymn is in the extended version of LSB, which is the digital version. It is also in the organ accompaniment edition. It also does live online as a PDF if you like search for this hymn. Concordia Theological Seminary Fort Wayne must have sung it at some point. So it exists as a PDF online. You can download it. The text and the tune are public domain. So we're not like breaking any copyrights here. So you can find it online too if you really want to have it. I love this hymn quite a bit. And this hymn originally appeared in the 1653 version of Praxis Pietatis Melica in 12 stanzas. We do not have 12 stanzas. I believe we have four.
Because I'm sure that we would be singing all of them if the way that Chaplain Denzer likes it. If we had 12 stanzas, we'd be doing them all.
We would do all of them. We have 5 stanzas. Mm. Aren't you sad we don't have the 12 stanza version though? Come on. I love 12 stanza hymns. We obviously have an abridged version, but the entire vibe is still there. Don't worry. You're getting the whole vibe of the hymn in just 5 stanzas. The opening line, I will sing in English, is actually a rhetorical question. In Gerhardt's version, shall I not sing the praises of God who has done so much? That's kind of fun. Our LSB translation is an updated version of the composite translation in TLH.
We should have gone with shan't I sing my maker's praises, but
there we go. But some great English there.
That.
No. The translation we have is based on the translation from Richard Massey, who I might have to have a bigger shout out in an episode one day because he comes up a lot as a translator for TLH and I don't know anything about him. So I don't know. So I'm going to pull up my PDF because I forgot to grab the printout that I have on my wall. When we have hymns printed out for chapel, I keep the handouts and I put them up on my wall. So I have several hymns hanging on my wall in my cubicle because hashtag hymn nerd would do nothing else. Uh-huh. Let's be honest.
It's true. All right.
This hymn has a huge range, so that might
It does. It goes all the way up to an F for all the altos out there.
Yeah.
And it goes quite low as
it
well.
It starts on a middle C and goes up to an F. So this is from the days when people naturally had bigger ranges. Our modern voices have kind of shrunk in their ranges. And so that might be part of the reason it's not in the regular.
All the pop stars are altos and tenors.
Exactly. Mm. Yep. That's a whole nother episode. Huh. Big soapbox. So anyway,
I'm married to a bass, believe me.
I am only going to do one of these two. This is also a long, long hymn.
I'm excited. I don't think I've heard this one.
Ooh, it's fun.
All right.
I will sing my Maker's praises and in Him most joyful be. For in all things I see traces of His tender love for me. Nothing else than love could move Him with such deep and tender care, evermore to raise and bear all who try to love and serve Him. All things else have but their day. God's great love abides for A.
It ends with the line, God's great love abides for A, which is just really fun.
Like all the stanzas do, except all of them for the very final one.
Yes.
Mm. Yep.
So this is my long question. What is A?
Doesn't that mean forever and ever and ever and ever?
Like, is it one of those, like, is it like twas? Is it like an abbreviation? Like a,
Rachel's like going to answer your question.
Elided things.
Elided. I don't know.
It is an archaic usage. Yes. That is occasionally. Yeah. Scottish, English. This meaning of for always. It's just always.
Okay.
Always or even so or even still. Even still. But yes, it gets mostly trotted out by poets who want to sound old-fashioned and need something that rhymes and has one syllable. So it's really useful.
Yeah. So he was in Massey was writing in the 1800s or translating in the 1800s. So yeah,
makes sense.
Okay.
He was in the John Mason Neal school of let's make it sound medieval, y'all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it's just one of those where I was like, does it mean God's great love abides for all ye? Yeah, like I knew it had a comprehensive meaning. I got that part of it. I was just like, this is not a word that I use enough to be confident of my.
Yeah, the only correction I would make is that I just pushed a button on my computer that pronounced it for me. It's pronounced I when you use it in this.
Hmm.
See, it rhymes with day in the hymn.
Yeah, we don't pronounce it like that in the hymn.
Yeah,
because
all of
us are like, we're assuming it's supposed to rhyme, so we're just like, it abides for A.
But
yes, every time I've read that word in like a novel, it's always been I as in yes. And
yeah,
so
and that is a different archaic use. Unless you're in the Navy, in which case it's very, very relevant today.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the original German on the internet, and I'm not succeeding. But I wonder what that original line was in German.
Yeah.
How it got translated. I'm really curious, but I'm probably going to have to ask somebody because I don't know that I can find the German fast enough to put it into this episode, and that is okay. Maybe I'll find it and publish it somewhere on our Instagram. Somebody's got to know. I'm sure like John Vicker has the original German somewhere. Probably. Well, that's all that's in my notes. Unless you want me to sing another stanza. It's great. I love it. It's got, did I actually finish explaining this hymn? I think I got excited about singing it.
Well, and then I was asking about
I'm good.
The word.
We're good.
The word meeting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I looked up Massey seems indeed to have specialized in Gerhardt and Luther hymns in our hymnal.
Okay.
The only hymn that he translated that is not by one of those two is by Christian Nur von Rosenroth. Come thou bright and morning star.
Okay.
But all the rest are actually, does he even have? He might even have one of the Hermann ones. Now I lost track of it while we were talking. So I
wonder if he specializes in German poetry.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to look this up now because he keeps coming up in these episodes when we do German hymn writing. It's always by Richard Massey. And it's usually, he was translating a lot for TLH. So he's probably super famous and I'm like, just don't know who he is. But there we are.
Yeah. Cool.
Do you guys have any other favorites from this list? I know asking for favorites in this list is really just cruel and mean, but I have a few favorites that pop out more than the rest. So
I mean, I really have come to appreciate the I will sing my maker's praises. It's a fun once usually the congregation, because it isn't one that we've grown up singing. Mm-hmm. And so it usually takes like a verse or two for people to hit the rhythm and realize that there's like a pause in there before.
Yeah.
But then the organist can do some fun things with like the boom, I ba, will ba, sing.
Ba. Yeah.
Like have a little downbeat.
Yeah, the downbeat's fun.
And so it is. It is a fun one to sing. It's vigorous.
It is vigorous. That is an appropriate word.
Yeah. No, I agree. I really have come to like that one a lot. And I also do like Evening and Morning.
Yeah.
And Oh Dearest Jesus. Those are my, that one is a lifelong favorite. But Evening and Morning is another one that it dances.
Mm-hmm.
And
you don't.
It's a very dancing one.
And you don't think it's going to be fun until you get to it and you look at it and you're like, oh, it's this one.
Yes.
Yay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite, hands down, is Wake Awake for Night is Flying.
Oh, yes.
Love that hymn. Verse 2 especially. Absolutely. Zion hears the watchman singing, and all her heart with joy is springing. She wakes, she rises from her gloom. For her Lord comes down all glorious, the strong in grace and truth victorious. Her star is risen, her light is come.
Hmm.
Can't wait to sing that in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, both it's of the Nicolai ones are way up there.
Yeah.
So.
And that one's really fun because, wait, no, it's the other one.
Is it the other one?
One of those has like exclamation points on every single line.
It's but I not think this one.
It's the other one. It's the Morning
There's
Star.
A lot, right? But not every line.
He's
it's just like you're just yelling the whole thing in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Just all over the place.
Yeah.
Evening and Morning, the tune was written by Johann Ebeling, who followed Johann Kruger in Berlin. So there's your little trivia.
Look at that.
I've never paid attention to that. Also translated by Richard Massey. So there we go.
Yeah. Oh, I need to see like a little timeline and like with little lines, like connections.
Of all the people,
yeah. The hymn writers and...
I wonder if somebody's done that for like some doctoral work. Maybe I'll do that at some point in my life. That would be fun.
That'd be exciting.
I also brought in a little show and tell today. I have this little illustrated biography of Paul Gerhardt that I found on my bookshelf. I'm pretty sure I bought this from the seminary library in Canada because they sell books online too. You can buy books from Canada. And I'm a Canadian nerd, so I love buying books from Canada. And I was like, ooh, an illustrated biography of Paul Gerhardt. Of course I want that. So it's way more detailed than anything I told you today. But it's kind of fun to just like read his entire story. It's by Doctor of Theology Hans Joachim Bisco. I think it was published in Germany. Kind of fun.
Very nice.
That's all I got for you.
Cool.
Hey, happy Hymn Writer Day, Sarah.
Hey!
Happy. So what's the name of the commemoration today?
It is the commemoration of Philip Nicolai, Johann Hiermann, and Paul Gerhardt, hymn writers.
I abbreviated. So
the official hashtag Hymn Nerd Day.
Okay, well, happy Hymn Nerds,
yes.
Everyone.
Happy Hymn Nerd Day. Ladies, we want to know, I mean, I won't ask you your favorite hymns, but if you do want to tell me which of these hymns you really, really enjoy, maybe a little bit more than the others, we'd love to know on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. And in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook. Join us in both of those places. You can also find all of our podcast episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.
The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org. Which contained both the queen.
I don't think Massey, I don't think he, oh wait, never mind.
I know he translated a lot in TLH.
I was in the composer's section. Yeah. I was like, somehow he's not here. He didn't translate anything, but he was just, I was in the wrong section.
Yeah. I don't know how many, but I feel like his name just comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know what? This whole list of the Lutheran hymnal texts, mm-hmm. I don't know. A lot of those might be his.